Hello, how you guys doing? First, briefly, I'd like to say thank you to APHA and thanks to all of you who work in public health. Thanks to my colleagues, DeCepo Jukwa and Dr. Shanae Bowie over here, who actually helped me, a formerly incarcerated woman, understand that public health was in place to ensure that there was conditions in which we could live healthy. And it was my goal as a person who was involved in that system, a consumer of their products for more than 20 years, who finally realized that, you know, I was trapped in a cycle that I could never break out of because my environment and the agent was steadily determining my future. And so I was able to use your social ecological model to use the epidemiology for incarceration, which is a disease. This project was funded in part by the California Endowment and Department of Public Health. The purpose of my presentation, I wanted to identify some of the main barriers that women face accessing healthcare resources, both in prison and out of prison. I want you guys to really understand what all the myriad of issues are and how complex that this system is when it comes to trying to find that one magic bullet that's going to really address these issues so we can have healthy outcomes for women inside and outside of prisons. And also identify that there are definitely structural systems in place that undermine all of our efforts to create healthy outcomes for women in and out of prison. Here's some stats about women in prison and how much it has increased over the last 10 years, mainly because of the war on drugs. Here's some more statistics right here about women in prison. Who are these women? Besides myself, my sisters in prison are women of color. People who come from impoverished communities who have had less and low access to fair legal representation, to resources in the community. We are women who come from fragmented families, some of us single family homes, been in a foster care system. We are women who have survived the most traumatic experience of, you know, molestation, incarceration, domestic violence, street violence, you know, community violence. And now we see large amounts of institutional violence that have been directly impacting us as women. Whose mother, whose daughter, whose sister? These are some things that we was able to identify when we went into the prison. My case study is particularly on San Bernardino County. What I want to give you is a little history on what's happening with the prison health care. You guys all know it was seized by the federal government. What does that mean, being in receivership? Well, it means that now we can't blame the Department of Correction for the ineffective health care services. We can now say it's a part of the government, because to date, there have been no real major reforms in health care inside of the prison. Women are still waiting in line for daily medications. So because there's so much bureaucracy, nothing is really able to get done. And I welcome public health to make their stance in the prison. Right here, we're looking at some more statistics of what has happened. The receiver is asking for $8 billion from the state of California, which you guys know, the state said we don't have no money. We already in the red, so you know how that whole scheme of things go. But it's been little done to improve the delivery systems. Here are the resource questions that was used for part of this study that we did for San Bernardino County right here. And I won't bother to read every slide on the PowerPoint. I feel like everybody here can read. We use a mixed method approach. We got both qualitative data and quantitative data. I was fortunate to have doctoral students from Loma Linda University Public Health System to help me create a survey instrument. I was fortunate to have the Department of Public Health come into the prisons with me, and we broke out focus groups, and we collected some of that qualitative data with the women's comments and the focus groups, and took all those themes and merged, and we actually mirrored it with the survey instrument that was actually administered in the community. We had a lit review of best practices. We did a GIS mapping to identify what was available in San Bernardino County for women who were convicted of drug felonies coming from prison to access. Found out that there was very little and it was very far between to get these resources. And we also did a survey sampling with the same population. Here's the survey, face-to-face self-administration. Here are some of the places that we went and we administered our survey right here. A total collected was 152 surveys during that period of time. We used that SPSS file for the data analysis, did the variables, some mining, and had a really descriptive analysis conducted. What we found, again, this is all information that we probably already know, right? There's a lack of employment, lack of health care, access to health care services and insurance, high levels of mental disorders, high levels of drug abuse and sexual abuse have been done to these women inside and outside of prison. Here's some stats from my survey about people who had employment. As you see, over 81% of people did not have employment at the current time. Here we have, again, insurance. Oh, more than half of the respondents did not have health insurance at that time. We have, out of the respondents that checked yes to having a mental health disorder, we see that the majority of them had cited cases of depression, bipolar, schizophrenic, and a lot of other bipolar and co-occurring disorders was addressed. Do you have a history of drug abuse? As you see, over 80% said, yes, I have a history of drug abuse. Again, not enough services inside a prison to address the need of the women who have admitted having issues of drug abuse. Then we look at reports of sexual and physical abuse. Myself being one, was molested by the age of 5, from the age of 5 to 7, that done something to me. That trauma done something to me. So it was easy for me to fall into the drug and alcohol trap after I was molested and never had no psychological counseling. Here we have women, again, reported high cases of sexual and physical abuse. The question was, have you ever had counseling? More than half said nope. We know the effects of trauma based on studies from Barbara Bloom, Dr. Owens, Dr. Covington, that trauma has on the effect of women and our self-esteem. Here's a summary of our results we have right here, that women don't have access to prison health care, they can't get out of prison and access health care, and that public health is there, but the conditions to live healthy are not exhibited in the community to which we return to, and that having a felony conviction basically equates to you're not qualified for housing, you're not qualified for disability, you're not qualified for welfare, you can't get food, you can't, you know, having a felony conviction, it bans you out of so much services that you become disenfranchised and marginalized in your own community. This is a study that was done by Covington and Bloom and Owens, and it actually had these four high issues as high important issues to correlate to my study, which had employment in there as well. Here's the discussion that we've been having. We've been talking about the more and more greater public health risks that are occurring. Women coming out with STDs that have been untreated. They're coming out and they're able to access reproductive health and other issues like that. More and more women are coming out having been on psych meds in prison. You know, all the psych medications that they have, and come out and you don't have your meds with you. We pick them up from the gate and you don't have your meds. I spend the next 3 days trying to find how to get you some medication that you have been on stable in prison, and now you don't have them, and you're squirming, you're squinching, you're saying, Miss Corey, you know, I just need my meds. You know, I have to go try to fight bureaucracy to get you some medication because you don't have your ID, you don't have no health insurance, you don't have a primary care physician. So now I'm down to Department of Behavioral Health fighting for you to get crisis intervention so that you don't go out and use drug and alcohol and be violated for parole and go back to prison when you get your meds on a consistent basis again. Things of that nature right there, we always are fighting in our community. What we found also was in prison, women did not get what they need. They was actually being re-traumatized by the environment of violence and the guards that are there. If you've been inflicted with being molested, you don't need a guard handling your soap, handling your Kotex, telling you when to shower, when to use the bathroom. These are all re-traumatizing effects. We're not giving appropriate counseling and mental health services, and everybody's suffering from multiple health conditions. You get out of prison, there's still gaps in services. You've been convicted of, say, child endangerment, meaning you were actually using drugs and had your kid in the car. Now you're being excluded from accessing free drug and alcohol programs because you're seen as violent. Because somebody decided to make a new classification of what is violence, and they've added a host of other charges in there, and most of the women are getting convicted of child neglect and child abuse, which means you're not able to access these free services. There's not enough appropriate programs available using the gender responsive strategies that this lady was talking about earlier, and most of them are ineligible for any federal government funding programs. What are the barriers in prison? A file a copay. Now, if you're getting 2 cents an hour, someone don't even get paid, you got to pay $5 to go see the doctor. Now, that $5 may seem small to us, but when you're in prison, $5 is a whole lot of money. And then when you go to the doctor, say you went to the doctor and you had a follow-up, you know, you don't get a follow-up for free. It's $5 again. So women who are, again, indigent, don't have money on their books, are having to choose, do I go to the doctor and let this $5 debt be on my books because they'll hold the debt on your books, or do I just go ahead and suffer through whatever's going on? There was a high staph infection going on. There was a $5 cream, antibiotic cream made available in the prison, but you had to buy it. Women were walking around taking their cream and sharing it with other people who couldn't afford to go to the doctor, and they were doing all sorts of things to try to help one another because the system wasn't designed to help them with issues such as staph infection and things of that nature. Then we have, which is already cited, that inmates are dying one per week from illnesses that are preventable and interventable. And those that are diagnosed with mental illness and taking their medications, they're not even giving information on how to manage the side effects. Like some of the women, they have blurred vision and they can't see. They have drooling coming from their mouths using all of these medications that come from psych meds. After prison, they have this insurance called MIA, right? We call it missing in action. Because if you got MIA, you're not going to be called back to the doctor. You're going to be down to the county emergency room waiting for follow-up care. And we all know that's not accurate health care. You have no access to anything to do with preventative care, right? And again, your drug felony status excludes you from a lot of services. Well, we have a policy recommendations. We want them to remove that $5 copay. We want inmates to be classified, not what the prison need, somebody to rake the lawn, wash the dishes and all that, but based on what the person coming in need, let them get a prescription methodology going. We can say you need drug alcohol counseling, you need, you know, trauma-informed counseling, and get you into those services. For the state, we're asking them to provide a continuum of care health services. Don't have you come out with no ID, no money, nowhere to go, and you're not able to access some health care services. And to, for God's sake, modify that 2006 TANF Welfare Reform Act that says that, you know, pregnant women can't get cash aid until they're 6 months, or you got a drug felony, you can't get welfare or food stamps. Do something about that. What are our public health risk factors that, you know, women in the community without health care are more likely to have any of these issues that we see right here? These are some awards that I have received as a result of using this public health model, the scientific approach, to actually prove what I'm passionately saying. See, I'm a passionate motivational speaker, but what I had to say needs to be proven. So you guys with your public health model help me say, see, I told you so. Huh? Now I have MPHs, PhDs, everybody with the alphabet saying what I've been saying. Now what we gonna do? That's what my whole charge is. What we gonna do now that we know that we know that we know, you know. This report right here is a report that is free download on my website. It's called Invisible Bars, meaning that people get out of prison, you don't realize how many bars are still keeping them in prison as far as accessing free services. This report is available. My co-author, she's going to be presenting in a few more minutes, but have more information on another part of this report. But please visit the report, and by God, use what you got to do what you got to do. Thank you.
That was very fast. Thank you, Kim. That was incredible. Candace, you're on. Our next speaker is Candace Robinson, and she's from Drexel University College of Medicine. Oh, no. Let's try that again.